The following is intended for mature audiences only. Discretion is advised.
Broth and his squeaks. God damn it.
Put some WD-40 on that.
Throw some spray on them the ears, dude.
Bad boo again. I was about to say some cold shit.
Shut up.
He heard the countdown and said, you know what? Let me make some noise now. God damn it.
You know what? This is the perfect time for me to order DoorDash when Josh is about to hit the record button.
We could not have asked for a more fantastic introduction for one of my absolute best friends. It's an honor to have him on the show. We are going to be talking to you and Gottfried today. Josh, go ahead and kick the beat. Making noise during the goddamn countdown, you son of a bitch.
I ain't gonna say nothing. I love you, Rob. I'll see you next week, nigga. We got a special guest up in here today, passing the blunt around with us, smoking the bleezy. Let's just be real. He's a great comedian. He's worked with one of the greatest documentarists of my time, Michael Moore. He's worked with the great comedians of Daniel Tosh. He's worked with Elmo. He's worked with Big Bird. And the number one pimp of them all, The Count. This man's won an Emmy Award for one of the greatest short films that year, about Miss Maya Dern. And also, by the way, guys, he's the only guy I know that can get me to Sesame Street. Ewing Godfrey.
Thank you for that lovely introduction of my IMDb page. I loved it.
No problem, baby.
When he did that, though, like the first time he gave it to us, he didn't have like that energy just yet. He read it like he was presenting Spielberg, and I was just like, and I was like, damn,
as he should.
Don't get me wrong,
like I
don't
told
get me
you,
wrong.
I told you,
I'm not saying,
I said, this here, bro,
yeah,
has done a lot more than I can even think about doing.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's a lot more than I thought.
Ewing, on a side note, I was calling Tim. I'm like, yo, Tim, so how does this sound? How's this? Is this good for your boy? And Tim's like, hell no, I don't give a. It's Ewing. I go, bro, to you, he's your best friend. I have best friends and close friends that are played in the NFL on professional teams. I get where you're coming from, but that's not to me. He's Ewing, the director who did Mother, who's won awards, who was out there chilling on the red carpet.
Admittedly, when I first met him, like I did like see his page, I was like, holy shit, this guy's done. So I went up to his office that first time when you were it was out in like, where was it?
Shit, I don't even remember.
It was one of those, exactly, because you're not there anymore. I was just like, I can't. I only went there once, but we ended up like, you know, hanging out.
It was downtown LA. That's where the fuck it was. I just remembered.
Yeah, there we go.
He's a Hollywood Burbank shit.
Yeah. It's somewhere. Name every town and county we can think of. We'll get it.
Staples Center.
I mean, shit. It was close by, really.
Mm-hmm. It was across the street, practically.
Yeah.
It was like you have to walk through a parking lot, but there it is. There's a Staples Center. The Crypto Center, whatever they call it now.
Guess that. Oh, you can't say that shit now. That I was hearing on the news that crypto. Is like crypto. Remember, Bloods and Crips.
They're like, it's trademarked. We trademarked it. You owe us money.
That's the funny part about it. They call it the Crip. Like, whoa.
They call it the Crip. Oh, no.
I cannot for the life of me. The age is kicking in because I can't remember how the fuck we met, Tim.
So
where was it?
I do.
The Glory Hole in Tacoma. Got it.
Yeah.
All right, give it to me. Remind me exactly where it was.
So
I feel like I've known you forever.
I mean, it was a dusty evening in Tacoma. All right. It was the Glory Hole was. You saw my shit online first a little bit, I think.
I think someone showed it to me.
Probably. That sounds more accurate. Because there's no way you would have just found me on your own.
No, but I remember somebody was like, you gotta check this shit out. And I remember looking at it going, whoa.
Yeah, Jane Silent Bob reboot. At the time was being promoted.
Was it Caviar Gold?
It was through Caviar Gold.
That's what it was. Kevin Smith and Caviar Gold.
Once he premiered his bud, I got linked up with Caviar Gold. And we did this piece together where it was Jay and Silent Bob, but parodied as the creation of Adam, where Jay's just butt naked on a giant nug and Kevin's just like giving him the index finger. And I was doing a giveaway and you entered, and by luck of the draw, you actually ended up getting the draw from the app that I was using. And so, you know, that's when I hit you up and you invited me over, and from there we hit it off.
Yeah. Like, I mean, and that piece of art I love, and you had Kevin and Jay sign it with you signing it. And it's the one piece of art that I cannot hang in the office.
Wow.
I love it so much, but I'm like, I can't hang that in the office. Everyone's going to be like, that's Jay Mew's dick.
Yeah, I can't even hang it in my own house. It's just, it's stored away in my closet, because like if my mom walks in, I don't think she's seen it, and she's seen the signatures on it, and she's like, she acknowledges that it's like, it's pretty great that it happened, but also it had to be goddamn weed.
Like, that is funny.
Yeah. There's a few things like that around our office. I mean, I got a lot of Jane Silent Bob shit around here, but I mean, like, I have to always think, well, anyone can walk in, and then I got like Jane Silent Bob stuff next to Sesame Street stuff, and I got to be a little careful here.
That is funny.
There's a fine line before Jay and Bob are slinging weed on Sesame Street.
Got the bong next to the Sesame Street DVDs.
It's, you know, yeah. Like, give it another 50 years and maybe there'll be a stoner Muppet on the streets.
Oh, no. Give it...
Big Bird.
They say Big Bird's tweaker or some shit like that.
Actually, you know what? If I had to say one of them, it's got to be Mr. Snuffleupagus.
I mean, it's in the name.
They're saying he's coke, though.
Well, that's just the nose. They just think it's the nose. But he doesn't have coke energy. He's got that low energy.
He's like snuffing something.
He's like, I got that in.
He's snipping pills, crushing them.
He's snuffing downers.
Can't find a pipe.
I don't know if we can ask you this, but which Muppet do you think is doing coke?
You know what? If I had to pick one, it's got to be... Abby, maybe, you know, the little fairy, because she's just always like, hey, everybody. It makes sense.
I mean, I almost thought that was going to go to Grover, not going to lie.
No. Grover's in his own.
He's an alcoholic, isn't he?
No. If anything, I think Grover would be like the kingpin of everything, because he's got super Grover on one end. So he's playing the good guy card. But on the other end, he'll do anything.
When watching Sesame Street after the LeVar burn, because the count to me stuck out as that code, because there would be certain sets that when they would do certain, the count, so he'd be walking out one, two, three, like he was counting his bitches and his drugs and his money. I always got that weird vibe with the count.
I'll give that to you. He definitely, like, if you...
Because he's always counting.
He's always counting. And he definitely does have just, like, Don vibes on Sesame Street.
Here's another thing. I swear he had... This is me. Going back as a kid, I swear he had drug sweat on his forehead. Like, he was doing... Okay, that's where I'm at. I swear he had drug sweat. I grew up with him as... Okay, that was the hype, bro. Was a pimp that was losing his bitches. Like, he was on the way out.
So one, two.
No, he was, the way his vibe was, the vibe I got from him was like, he was like, all right, bitches, I'm losing you bitches by the one, two. I lost two bitches yesterday. I got that weird vibe from him, bro. I'm just saying, that's me. And then the Grouch.
He's the alcoholic.
No. The Grouch was that one that'd suck your dick for a dollar, crackhead. I always got that from it.
I will say this. If we're going to talk Sesame Street on that side, I'll call it Sin Sesame for this. But if this was Sin Sesame in a different universe, the count to me, maybe I might get canceled for all this, but the count to me would be the Better Call Saul character of Sesame Street that everybody goes to for like legal advice or money laundering.
Exactly. He's the last resort.
But he's also the side guy that everybody needs and helps and, you know, supports. Like, he's there and, you know, he's like, doing the whole thing. And he's he can put money anywhere and find out any situation. Everyone can trust him with numbers because he's got fingers more so than everyone else.
When he's sitting down, he's just like, okay, I will do this, but I require one, a two, no, three favors.
There you go.
Where does Big Bird stand throughout that?
Oh, Big Bird, if anything, Big Bird's the drug dealer. Because if you think about it, he walks around the entire neighborhood, knows everybody, is friends with everybody. And he's always like,
the plug.
I want to introduce you to my other friend.
passing him off his nest eggs.
Be the plug.
And one of his best friends, Mr. Snuffleupagus.
And that's what's so cool about it. So he's like this, come on, Bird. How we know your product good? Look at this. Come on, Bird. You got Bert and Ernie are the ones dudes that are like, not in our neighborhood. They're like the anti, bro. They try to stop that shit and can't stop it.
They're failure HOA members.
I don't know. Are they, I'm probably going to get canceled for that. Are they gay?
A lot of people keep thinking that, and I have no comment on it.
Yeah, but, because listen here, bro. I'm just saying this. Tim's my boy. Ralph's my boy. But you're never going to see a video of me getting in the same bed with him. There's videos of him in his bedroom like, Bert, it's time for bed. And
I'm pretty sure they got separate beds. It's been years ago.
I really hope so.
I'm almost certain they're separate beds.
So we're doing a Lucy bedroom setup then.
I always saw it more as Ethel and, I forgot the husband's name from that show.
Ricky Ricardo, that motherfucker was the man. Now, that was the first Mexican I ever knew. I'll tell you that, Rob. You thought that was the first Mexican I ever knew, bro.
He's not Mexican.
I'm telling you.
He is not Mexican.
Oh, Cuban.
Sorry
no
to
shit.
Backtrack.
Oh, well, there you go.
Oh, yeah, indeed, okay. Yeah.
So I didn't say it then. It wasn't me.
I would hit y'all with this one. Who's pitching and who's receiving?
Ooh, I don't know. They both got a hand up their ass.
So... Yeah, that's a tough call.
All right, let's get off of the sin street. Now, how was it working with doing the Bad Batch, dude? How was it working on that, may I ask?
Bad Batch was super weird because it was still kind of aftermath of COVID. Like, we were still in the COVID protocol, so I did everything from home.
Oh, wow.
I worked with so many people on that, and honestly, you could say their name. I want to know you. I could walk down the street. We could pass each other. We would never know. It was very much so one of those productions. Everybody had their bubble.
That makes sense. I'd seen Vanessa Marshall, I guess, like one of the voice actresses on Bad Batch. And like when I asked her if she knew you, she was like, doesn't ring a bell. But that checks out. Like if everybody was working under those conditions,
like it was practically doing everything over Zoom. Like that's straight up how it was.
Dang.
The weird thing that like throughout the whole process of it was like the dubbing side is they will straight up dub the like robots or aliens in different languages. Like they do a full redub on everything. So you'll just get a French guy coming in going, go bangli da bangla. And then you'll have a German guy come in and be like, go bata gugiga bata. You know, it was just the weirdest shit ever. But the thing I loved most was the Wookiees. Like the whole season I was on was just all Wookiees. Like every episode I worked on was Wookiee this, Wookiee that. And we there was just Wookiee jokes left and right. So that was my favorite from it was just all the Wookiees.
That touches like on mine and Boo's like one of the favorite genres growing up and shit, Star Wars.
Oh yeah, dude.
You know, I actually have a here, I'll show it to you. Give me 1.5 seconds. All right, here you go. Bam. Original Star Wars script right there.
Oh, shut the fuck up, dude. That's dope.
Get out of here. That's dope.
That's insane. Sitting right here on the shelf. And my grandfather, the only thing he had ever done in film was he was part of an investor, like an investment club kind of pool thing that put money into the studio that was, you know, doing Star Wars and put it into the project. He saw one of the very first cuts of it, you know, that that historic moment they always talk about in the history of Star Wars, where everybody came in to watch the first cut of Star Wars and everybody fucking hated it and was like, this is a pile of shit. My grandfather got to see that cut and was like, this is bad.
Damn, so, that's dope.
But then it was obviously, you know, Lucas's wife and a bunch of amazing editors, you know, changed it around and made
Did he tell you anything that wasn't in the that wasn't the one that he seen, that wasn't the one that we seen? Nah, was there anything different?
No, not really. He didn't really tell me much or talk about much. I just know, like, many a times there was always like boxes of certain Star Wars toys or different memorabilia pieces that I was not allowed to look at or touch as a child.
Damn. Damn, that's
my
always...
Star Wars figures were the paper, was Oof. Like the paper stencils of the figures. That's just, what I played with.
What a tease to grow up with just like the holy grails of just, you know, childhood toys. And just, dude, I would want to touch that so bad.
That's my nephew is, because I got all the before Disney bought them, their anniversary edition, and my nephew looks at them when he comes in, he's like, can I play with them? I'm like, nah, homie, get your fingers away from them, bro. Get your grimy, get your dirty
Don't
little
you
nasty hands, get your dirty little nasty hands away from them.
Can't have you touching, like, the, you know how much this shit cost or is gonna cost?
You just looking at it, I lost $5. Quit looking at it.
There you go.
So tell us about Tosh a little bit. I used to watch that a lot growing up.
I mean, honestly, Tosh shaped a lot of, I don't know, maybe not necessarily shaped my humor, but it definitely gave me a spot to express it differently and more out there, because, like, I mean, there are so many, I mean, you can go back and watch it, but I mean, there's so many different, you know, segments and scenes where they will mess with the writers, you know, or mess with the writer's room. And I just loved that. The fact that you kind of get to be behind the scenes and see the humor of that in the comedy. And now Conan O'Brien does that all the time, like where he'll get into the offices and mess with the people he works with. And Kimmel does that. And to me, like that was like late night TV. And, you know, I don't want to say that all the late night shows, you know, did that more after Tosh.0, but I don't know. Like
you could definitely see, you could definitely put a marker where it starts and where everyone else does it after. Yeah.
Maybe it was a network decision of just like, hey, people like the behind the scenes stuff. Start showing that shit more. But that was something that was probably my most favorite. And I mean, like Daniel Tosh, he's just so funny. His writers were fantastic. I mean, the whole like everything about it was just fun, except for running and having to get shit done really fast. That was the only time I was like, oh, this needs to be done in like 20 minutes. Move on.
Man, how did you get into all this? Like what, where would you say you made the point to like take this on as like a full on, like, okay, I'm going to make money doing this kind of shit.
You mean it like as a career in general?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I guess you would have to rewind to when I was a little boy staring up at the clouds. but in a sense, yeah, I mean, kind of. When I was really young, I grew up in a video store and I fucking loved going through and picking up the different VHS tapes and just read it, like looking at a cover art of the, you know, the box art on a VHS tape, which, you know, people don't understand anymore. They don't get the same nostalgic factor out of that. But I mean, being able to look at it and just be enticed by what is in this magical film, because there was no YouTube to look up a trailer or anything. Everything was complete curiosity. And that's what I fucking loved. And so I used to just go through and just like pick one off the shelf, pop it up in the VCR and watch it, and then pop it out, grab the next one off the shelf, and just keep going down every row.
Keep going, dude.
And I still to this day believe that I've watched every single tape we had in that store. Even like the random hunting ones. You know, the only place I probably didn't get to was the porn section. You know, that was in a filing cabinet. And even if I found the box, they put the tape somewhere else and it was in a back room with a lock, you know? And so that was a little different. But throughout that entire process, I kind of ended up, you know, at a very young age, kind of taking over the video store and having to, you know, learn how to run a business. And I would you know, hire the teenagers that worked there. I'm just this little kid who's the boss, paying them, you know, their checks and making sure to figure out, you know, what
so
people
you were clerks
wanted.
Before clerks, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like I was
like,
video
this
store.
Sounds familiar, like Quentin Tarantino,
I've seen
Kevin
this
Smith.
Before. Wait a minute.
Yeah,
yeah. It, you know, like when I go, I just watched a documentary on Tarantino, and I was like, I can relate to this like heavily. I'm like, I don't know if I should just give up now because he already did it, or if it just makes me go like, hey, perfect, I'm on the right track. I don't know.
It's definitely like both validating and like when you see like bigger people like just doing or having done already what you're doing at that moment, it definitely like it gives you both vibes. I can feel that for sure. That's wild.
Oh yeah, like I mean, but that was to me, that was a great experience, and like being able to see other people having those experiences and it panned out for them, you know, it's like you said, it gives you that peace of mind to think maybe I'm on the right track. And that was pretty much also how I learned to vet what people looked for in films. Cause I talked to every customer that came through, figured out what they wanted, recommended. And then I also have to get the catalog and order those VHS tapes coming out from distributors to put in the store. And so that was kind of where I was like, holy shit, people can make these things? Like, this is a job for people. And I don't have to just run a video store all my life. And so then I got a camera, started f***ing around with things, trying to do some goofy backyard productions, so to say. And then I would sneak my own VHSs onto the shelf and try to get people to rent them.
Hey, and dude, I would too. If I was in a bookshop or anything, I just like slip my own homemade comics right.
Did anybody
on the
actually
shelf.
Ever rent your shit?
Yeah, oh yeah. And it was always a hit or miss where somebody would come back and be like, you know, I was pissed, but I enjoyed it, you know, or somebody would come back and be like, what the fuck is this? I think somebody taped over this. And I was like, I can't tell him it was me.
That's funny. That's cool that you were able to get like focus testing in terms of just like what the general market was looking for that way. That's awesome.
So much so. And like one thing I will say is I had a lot of good, I don't know if they're the best teachers in the world, but I had a lot of good school teachers at the time that just clicked in the right moment where they said, hey, you know, if you want to make a film as your homework or presentation or whatever, go for it. And we'll show it at the end of the day, the whole class. So for about a good year, that was every assignment for me. Every assignment was a video of some kind, you know, like it was very Bill and Ted, or it was very inappropriate or just bad, or it was a horrible action film to talk about this war that happened.
That reminds me, I mean, like you were telling me earlier that like your varied genres of just like the shit you've with, you've gone from like political stuff to like Tosh to then horror and then cannabis.
Yeah, like how was it working with Michael Moore?
Michael Moore, it has its pros and cons for sure. I was at a weird time in my life at that moment because I had just come over to New York. We were working on Capitalism, a Love Story. He works in a very, I don't know like how to say it, like it's a fast pace, but a relaxed fast pace. And it's always a big scale of something, but how do you do it as if it's not a big scale? so it was stressful to learn, but it was fun. I did get to learn a lot of like how to get it one time. Like you got to get it when you get it because you're not going to get another chance. And also how you save your ass is how do you fake it the right way to make it work together? You know, there were times where we'd be thrown out of building, but then we would come back and film the reverse, you know, of what it was supposed to be happening or some more insert shots later on and make it seem like it all happened at that exact moment. So I learned a lot of that, and that was great. You know, it really helped me learn documentary filmmaking.
And speaking about documentaries, what made you want to do Mother? What led you to do the documentary on Maya Dern?
I love surrealism and avant-garde, you know, things of that nature, which are considered completely non-commercial nowadays and unmakeable. Or you can find a way to have something surreal, but you got to find another genre to attach it to. You can't just have an experimental film anymore it's not that era. People don't go to theaters or film festivals to go watch those films, I feel like, but they should. And she was one of the very first females to really pioneer the surrealism. And all of her films were made for like the price of what Hollywood spends on lipstick. That's like one of her famous quotes. And I loved Meshes of the Afternoon was one of her films that I used to watch all the time because it's so simple. It's so easy. But at the same time, it's so thoughtful and artistic. And the technical achievement is simple, but it's there. It's like, you know, it's just precision kills it in a great way, like just nails it. And I was like, wow, that's great. And then I started watching her other films. And some of her later work got a little weird closer to the time of her death. Her whole life was just crazy.
Kind of like Stanley Kubrick in a way.
Yeah, like, I mean, like, so many people have these wild lives, but, like, her is, like, dying, like, you know, I forgot what date it was, and I don't want to be wrong on about it, but it's, I think it was, like, either on Halloween or really close to Halloween, she had passed away. It was just, like, such a weird thing, and, like, her the voodoo side before she died got crazy. So if you ever take the time to really learn about her, it's amazing. But we took the time to really like learn about her and her life and her filmmaking. And then I was like, you know what? I really just want to do an experimental art film homaging all of her different films and work in our own way. And I know that I'm a male filmmaker, but as a female filmmaker, I want her to get the notice from it because there's so many people that want to talk about female directors and creators nowadays. But not once does anyone ever go back and mention some of the greats of the past.
Pioneer ones. Yeah, I get you.
You can't talk about today without knowing the past.
Because they struggled more than any females would struggle nowadays. If they struggled nowadays, I can't imagine what it was like for them back then.
Oh, it was horrible. Like, I mean, some of the stuff that she went through was just god awful. And you know,
oh, yeah, I can't imagine her not even getting equipment that works and shit from that to...
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying right there, she couldn't get equipment without having a male help her to get that equipment and use that equipment.
Let alone getting a permit and allowing to film in a certain spot or anything. That's not even fathomable back then.
Is there or like, is there now anything like before or after your documentary, like regarding her in that respect, in that light?
Not that I know. I mean, there was a really good documentary on her that we watched and like got their entire research on beforehand. But I mean, like ours, you know, our film wasn't necessarily a proper documentary because it wasn't necessarily about her life. It was more about her work.
So it was about her artwork.
It was a love letter to her work. Okay.
Exactly. It was more of a love letter to her work. Like we had no dialogue in our film whatsoever. It was in black and white. We started it off with like, you know, a 4x3, really grainy, looking like it was shot on 8mm or 16mm. And then right at the beginning, after the little intro, you see the frame change and the HD come in. So we kind of was like, hey, this is where she started, but this is where we are today. And this is what her films would have looked like today if she was around. And we did that film on a production budget. I mean, granted, I owned my own equipment at the time, so, you know, it was my gear. But we spent $200 on that entire film. And then I think we spent 70-something on a parking ticket. You know, damn, but I don't count that on the budget. I count that as oops. But that's what we spent. And then we had to raise a little bit more money for film festivals, but it wasn't about the production. That was just about the, you know, film festivals and the marketing. And it shocked the hell out of me. I never thought it would do well. You know, we tried to send it out to the major film festivals. And once again, experimentals, they do not give a shit. They were like, oh, this is too experimental. We want A24 experimental, but this is too experimental.
And there's kind of line that's just like, that's too much. Like that's annoying.
It was a letdown in that sense, but so many other amazing film festivals recognized what it was and picked it up and showed it. And it did really well. I mean, like, forgot the final number, but I think it was like something like 60, almost 60 awards worldwide. Yes, like it won Calcutta. You know, like there was a lot of great film festivals that did like it.
Congratulations, brother. That's awesome.
Thank you. I mean, it was, It was a ride, but thanks. You know?
Well, shit, dude. It's been amazing having you on. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
For hopping on our little show, dude.
You can find me on whatever socials I still have active because I hate social media that much. But, you know, I'm around. You can find me at Got Ewan.
All right, Josh, get that beat.
Be good human.